You're about to enjoy TryHards, courtesy of MTGCast.com. If you enjoy TryHards or anything else supplied by MTGCast, please make a donation. Whether it's recurring or one time, you can help offset the very real overhead of bringing you the best podcasts in magic every week. MTGCast at MTGCast.com.
It's got to be on that Urban Dictionary.
Barrel-aged scotch and pork rinds.
I'm super jealous I can't go.
It's almost like the Rainbow Bridge from the Thor movies.
You can sell me nostalgia. Just don't go too far and expect me to pay too much for it.
My old man addled brain that's clogged up with lard and fat right now.
This is the Hate Bears Hate Bear.
This is format warping.
I can't believe they hate Storm so much.
Oh, you brave soul. Thanks for joining us for the 95th episode of TryHards. I'm Sean Seacrease, he's Brian Tibbetts, and he's Matt Hurley. You want proof of our love for you, how much you mean to us? We're sitting down to record instead of taking in Villanova versus Michigan in the NCAA Men's Basketball Championship. Quick line, Villanova favored by 7 as they tip off. Matt, who you got?
Villanova.
Brian, who you got?
Oh, Villanova, if they can hit the threes like they were the other night, I think they're unstoppable. But, you know, the Big Ten is near and dear to my heart. So I got to go with the boys in blue.
My bracket has a giant crap stain down the middle anyway, so I had to adjust as I went.
Villanova, too much size, too much movement, too much for Michigan. That's my pick for the championship this evening. Who's going to win the championship of Dominaria? Well, it depends on which timeline you prefer. We'll try and take in all of its fractured glory as we start looking at Dominaria releases here this evening. We'll take a quick jaunt over the pond. We'll figure out whether or not Magic's new logo heralds a brave new era. And yes, we're going to do some complaining now that the NDA has dropped. It's all in this week's episode of TryHards. Guys, what are you drinking as we get things started? Brian, you just got back from the Sunshine State, God's waiting room. Did you bring anything back with you?
Because we were flying, I did not bring anything back. That's probably a cheap excuse. While I was down there, though, I enjoyed two beers that I remember. One was called Reef Donkey, which was a really good kind of middle-of-the-road IPA. Not very heavy at all. And the other one I had just the last day I was there called a Three Daughters, sitting on the beautiful, beautiful park in St. Petersburg under a banyan tree, sipping on a Three Daughters, staring out over the marina. Didn't get it much better than that. So that was a little heavier, a little darker. Back in the Midwest now, God knows what the weather's going to do over the course of the next few days. I'm treating myself. I can't have too much sugar, but that doesn't mean I can't have a chocolate milk stout from Four Hands Brewing Company down in St. Louis. So that is what I am enjoying this evening.
My mind just went to terrible places when you said those two names of those beers. I was like, I'm thinking that's something you see late at night by yourself or maybe with a special loved one. When you look up those videos, what would you do? I Reef Donkeyed the Three Daughters. You know,
exactly. No, Reef Donkey, the very first time I had to order it, I said, does that say Reef Donkey on it? And she said, yeah, do you want to try one? And I was thinking, it's got to be on that Urban Dictionary. Reef Donkey is kind of like Donkey Punch. It's like the Dirty Sanchez, something like that. Lo and behold, just a delicious IPA.
Delicious Reef Donkey for Brian here this evening. The Lagunitas Wilco Tango Foxtrot here in Magic Command Central this evening. Matt, what are you drinking?
I hate this diet because you guys get to talk about all the beer you're drinking. And since it's low carb, I can't have beer. I could probably have one. But tonight I'm finishing off my bottle of IPA barrel aged scotch that we actually cracked when we were up in Eternal Weekend. So I have one glass left. We had a couple glasses the other night or last night when we had people over for Easter, and it got the taste buds wanting to try it again. So I'm having the last glass of the IPA finished scotch that I have.
Ryan, don't you feel bad for Matt on that diet? Just barrel aged scotch is what he's got to make do with.
Well, the fact that I had to sit there and listen to him eat pork rinds last week and listen to that as
in
like
the
staple
post,
of his quote unquote diet. I'm taking a flyer on this one and being like, suck it up.
I did buy two cases of pork rinds from Aldi's the other day, Saturday, I think it was, and the lady looked at me weird.
Matt, we're going to start putting your weigh-ins on the Patreon page and
okay.
Let people be able to
we
track.
Do that. That'll be good motivation for me. I'll be honest. I haven't felt this good probably since I got right out of the Army, and like in all honesty, when I was actually in shape. I'm not in shape right now, but like mentally, I'm much more aware. I'm not tired all the time. I don't feel like crap. I do today because I drank a little bit last night, but super impressed by how it makes me feel. Now, I was joking with Lauren last night. This is the calm before the massive coronary that we're going to have because of all the fat we're eating.
You heard it here, tryhards. You want to feel better? Barrel-aged scotch and pork rinds. That's a fitness book I can't wait to have come out.
Oh,
that's
Lord.
What we're drinking for this episode of Tryhards. I hope you've got something just as delicious. Matt, what magic did you play this week?
Put together the Mardu smallpox deck in paper. Goldfished it a couple times, but I played it out. Boy, did I get crushed. I got destroyed by humans, Storm, a Revolt Zoo, and I'll tell you what, like, I didn't win a single game. I just could not hold a candle with that deck. After that showing, I'm like, this one may go on the shelf now, and I'm putting together the Esper Ashiok, and I've just got a couple cards I'm missing there, and I think that's what I'm going to play next week.
That smallpox deck, it does take a little while to get going. Is that part of the problem when you come up against one of those really fast modern zoo decks, kind of like you were saying, the Revolt Zoo?
You know, that wasn't actually the problem. The problems were that I'd eliminate 1-2 lands, and then they would just top deck into lands or just draw lands. So it was really, I didn't have a way to close out the game quickly. By far the biggest problem I had. I'm not going to completely shelve it. I'm going to pay attention to it and just see if maybe there's a new finisher that'll pop up here soon. But yeah, in general, I was just like, I was extremely disappointed in how it performed.
Wednesday is usually the night Matt streams. Check out which deck he's getting up to this week. You can check it out on twitch.tv, the Tryhards stream hosted by Matt. Between Easter weekend and the fact that because of Easter weekend, FNM was moved to a very casual format, EDH. There were no paper cards for Sean this week with everything going on. I did get to do some arena. We'll talk about that a little bit later in the show, as it's the second week now that the NDA has been lifted and more thoughts being shared throughout the community. Brian, I know you were traveling. Did you get a chance to play any Magic?
I did not. I was hoping maybe I would run into one of those Florida pros in the airport, you know, and be like, hey, let's throw down at one of these cool Delta kiosks that they have set up here. But no such luck. I caught a tiny bit of coverage this weekend, but did not get to play any. I was more concerned with the golf game more than anything this weekend, which was kind of hilarious and yet still fun.
You hit golf balls like you throw a disc. That would be a hysterical thing to watch.
No, I'm actually better at probably ball golf than I am at disc golf.
We start out the month strong each month. Whether or not it's our content or our giveaway, we like to think at least one of the two is worth showing up for. Guys, it's time for another Patreon raffle. This time, sponsored by Try Hard Matt. Matt's putting up a reflecting pool. And this is an important note. This is an original Tempest reflecting pool. This is the correct art. This is one of my favorite lands of all time. Matt, how many eligibles do we have for this week's Patreon raffle?
57.
Let's set the randomizer here, 1 through 57, and push 31. 31 this week.
Jason Ernstum.
Jason is one of the Hart of Famers who picked up their complimentary Try Hards playmat, the limited edition first run that went out. He, along with Brian Sloan and others, and Brian Sloan got back to us, guys. He loves his mat. He's taken it to SCG Milwaukee this weekend. He hopes that all the other Hart of Famers that are there that have their mats will bring them, and that they can then meet each other and get to know each other. Brian, good luck when you play this weekend, and let us know how many Ellers you run into, and if you see any other try-hard playmats in Milwaukee for the SCG Open. Now, this week, we were supposed to have information about, if you're not a Hart of Famer, how you can pick up your mat. We are going to be selling them, and this is how we're going to do it. We have to delay actually making them available because of infrastructure on the internet and taking the payments and so forth. But you can get prepared, scratch up those pennies, shake out the couch cushions. This is the way it's going to roll. First 15 Patreon members who contact us, whatever your Patreon level of support has been, we will deduct that monthly from the cost of $25. So if you've been a $10 member in good standing for at least 3 months, $15 playmat for you. You can figure out the rest of the math for yourself. We will let you know when those go live. So if you want to try and get in line, feel free to email us and we can make sure that you've got your copy reserved. But we wanted to make sure that you know those are coming as soon as we get some back end things together online. So so that we can get those to you quickly. Try Hard's merch and ready to roll out. Thanks again to all the patrons who have supported us and who've made that possible. And this is just the beginning of the merch train. Should be fun going forward. Guys, tournament action from this weekend. Just one GP over Easter weekend. And that was the Team Limited event at GP Amsterdam. 522 teams sat down with 12 packs, three players, and just got to work. In the end, Yeronen Kirian, Simon Gertz, and Pim Heine were the winners. Congratulations to that trio as they came through 521 other teams to take down the Team Limited GP in Amsterdam. There's two GPs coming up this weekend, gentlemen, and they're both in Seattle. This, Brian, is the first that I can remember outside of the Las Vegas celebration a couple years ago that is going to see more than one GP format on a weekend. The king of all formats, Legacy, will be the headliner, and Standard will see a GP format as well. Is this something you think Wizards is going to do more of going forward, the double format on a GP weekend, and do you like the idea?
I do think they're going to do more of these on a weekend, and I do like it. I really do. I think it gives people more options. It attracts more people. Some who might not be into one format see it as another format, and they're like, oh, yeah, we can carpool. I'll play the Standard. You play Modern. I'll play Modern. You play Legacy, whatever. Just another way to get more people involved. I love the idea. I really, really do. And it's great to have them going kind of simultaneously, the Standard and the Legacy things. It's not a team event. That's a much different thing. And so to have their own event for that format, I think is a really good idea. And I do hope they stick with that.
Matt, should we be worried about formats draining players from each other when they're firing simultaneously?
No, I think this, they have, you can call it a Magic Mecca every year. And this is this year's Magic Mecca. Typically it's in Vegas and this year it's just in Seattle. I actually think they might be transferring it to Seattle because of logistics cost. It's a whole lot easier for them to run what's right in their backyard. Having this type of format just like once a year, just, you know, they're going to have tons of cosplayers out there. They're having tons of people are just super excited about it. So I think this is their kind of dipping their toe in to say, okay, let's see if we can't move this to Seattle instead of Vegas. Everyone seems excited about it, and I'm super jealous I can't go.
Matt, I'm glad you brought up cosplayers because they are part of the next thing I want to dive into. Magic announced that with the release of Dominaria for the 25th anniversary, they are changing up the Magic logo. Now, if you want to know what the difference is going to be, just grab any Magic card you've got lying around and look at the back of it. All right, this day and age, you might have to take it out of a sleeve. That wasn't the case when I started playing. And you have the recognizable M in blue with Magic and then the Gathering underneath. Well, it's going to be a similar look to the logo, but the long-standing Planeswalker symbol, the multi-pronged pitchfork with the handle sort of stretching off the bottom of it, is just going to appear to the left of the Magic the Gathering logo. And the typeface is getting an update as well. Not a huge change, but it is yet another change to the logo. Matt, is this something that you think is really relevant, or is this just somebody trying to change a little bit to make sure their product stays fresh?
This is just a refresh of a logo. It's no big deal. You can never change those card backs. I mean, as much as they look dated and everyone kind of hates them, you can never really change them and have, you know, maintain your game as a whole. So this is a refresh, and I think it's a refresh because of Arena. And with Arena coming out, you need that hyped up logo. You need, you want to feel like you're in the digital age versus, you know, what's on the back of the card. So now, I mean, it's not a big deal. I don't understand why people are just crapping all over it. I've seen a lot of people talking about it online and just saying it's terrible. I'm like, you know, it's just a logo, guys. It's not a big deal.
Brian, I have called the Pro Tour Trophy the biggest eyesore trophy in the world of sports and competition. Is this overhaul of the logo maybe going to lead to an overhaul of that? And I mentioned cosplayers a moment ago. Isn't it time that we had a cosplayer dress up as Trophy Mage in order to hand out the trophy at the Pro Tour?
Oh, no, that's a good idea. I hadn't even thought of that. Yeah, let's just call Wizards and just tell them the tryhards have deemed that to happen, and we'll just get that done. I don't really like mucking with stuff. And when I see the logo on product like the Dominaria, it's not even a fat pack. What the heck? I still call them fat packs, the bundles that they are nowadays. I see this and I'm like, yeah, that's still Magic the Gathering because it just says that in words. But it's not what I'm looking for. I'm looking for the old style spellbook font to grace the card across. It bugs me a little bit, but I'll get used to it. It's not that big of a deal. I think Matt's right. With Arena coming out, you've got to stay a little bit updated. The card back is going to be the biggest thing. Everybody plays with sleeves, and I could see at some point that Wizards might change the card backs and then just require everybody in a tournament setting that you have to play with sleeves.
Yeah, I don't think we're too far away from that happening, and I could certainly see it happening as well. We'll see how Wizards handles this going forward. Guys, it has been over a week now since Wizards dropped the NDA surrounding the Arena beta. And while we discussed some of our thoughts last week, mostly talked about the economy, we stayed away from gripes. Well, that window is shut, and I have a few gripes that I need to air out with you here this evening. So these are my kvetches, we'll say. I'm not salty. This is playtesting for Wizards, and I already made the appropriate log entry where you're supposed to report these, but I want to continue the conversation, as I think that was Wizards' point in dropping the NDA. The first problem I have is I feel like the matchmaking is too wide in order to accommodate a quick pairing. Most matches get paired in less than 10 seconds. I would feel good waiting up to a minute to get a pairing of someone that is close to my player level. I'm a mid-tier bronze right now. I haven't had a chance to play a lot. I played 11 matches in a row last night against gold-rated or higher players. And I had some wins in there, but you're talking about decks that are being fully tricked out. One of the matches I lost to the Quad Hazoret. All right, you don't get one of those in the intro decks. That means somebody turned in at least four Mythic wild cards to put together their top-tier red aggro deck. Getting paired against someone that's closer to your level, I would be willing to wait quite a bit longer. Not days, but rather than 10 seconds, 30, 40 seconds, that's fine. I think you need to widen the matchmaking. And as more people come on board, that's probably going to figure itself out. And if it's going to be matched where I'm a mid-level bronze taking on a top-level gold, I should get way more prestige when I win that match. If I lose it, I should lose a fraction. And if I win, I should win a whole bunch of prestige for winning that level up. Some of the cards right now that are modal, like a Braid, don't have full functionality. There's been quite a few times where I can't select one or the other half of a Braid, even though I want to. And finally, I was playing against the Anointed Procession Embalm deck, and when all of the opponent's triggers went on the stack, they had multiple of the ones that gain you life for each token and multiple Anointed Processions out. It created something like 132 triggers. And then my timeout started running because it took so long for their triggers to resolve. So that's something that has to be fixed, because when they put triggers on the stack, in no way should your timeouts start to tick down, because it takes the system time to resolve all those triggers that get put on the stack. So those are some of the things I've been running into. Brian, have you had a chance to play any Arena, and have you run into any issues that have you sort of grinding your teeth?
Definitely the timing out and when my opponent is playing, and then I see that little fuse making its way around in that circle on my side, and I, just like you, Sean, what is happening? I can't control what the person's doing on their turn. I find that the timing is sometimes a little strange, where it's my opponent's turn, but I feel like I'm supposed to be, you know, clicking through my sequencing to acknowledge that there are no attacks, that there are no blocks, that is the end of the opponent's turn. And I find that a little strange. I don't know why I need to do that. Part of the interactivity of the game should take over in that sequence, I think. Part of it is, too, and I think I haven't played nearly as much as you have on Arena, but I feel like when I have Enter the Battlefield or Haste creatures coming into play and I want something to happen, I find it very, very difficult to make that happen in a non-clunky way. When I have to tap a creature, target my opponent's creature, I'm still finding that interaction very, very strange. It's almost like the Rainbow Bridge from the Thor movies, where, you know, the little stream of light goes to your opponent's card. And I'm like, I think I'm picking that one. And then it turns out I'm not. And I'm like, how was I supposed to do that? At one point, I know I was, I went to sacrifice a creature that was going to deal one damage to a target creature. And it just sacrificed itself, and it did no damage to anybody else because apparently I had timed out. and I'm frantically trying to click on other creatures, you know, for this to happen. So very, very strange little interactions like that. I hope they get figured out. I did get crushed the other day by Merfolk. The Merfolk decks, if they can get all the right cards in sequence and then make those 1/1 hexproof Merfolks, my God, that is really, really hard to deal with. I was hoping beyond hope that I had like a Sweltering Sun somewhere in my deck. I know I didn't, because it would have just been like, oh, I need this card so bad. There was just no way to fight through it. So kudos to people who are building really, really powerful decks on there. But I do hope you get some of the play things figured out. Wizards get some of the play things figured out, because it does make it a very, very negative experience when, you know, the most basic things can't go off without a hitch.
Yeah, some of the answers for the threats that were in Amonkhet block were actually in Kaladesh, so Kaladesh isn't in there. So it's this real wonky grouping of cards right now that lead you to a lot of what the... Okay, let's go back to my beer for the episode. A lot of Wilco Tango Foxtrot moments as you try to play this out. Matt, have you had a chance to play, and any frustrations that you're left with?
So there were some bugs at the beginning. They're fixing them rather quickly. The other nice part is they can fix a lot of these bugs on the fly without shutting the system down like they have to with MTGO. I really hate, and we talked about this a little bit, how the embalm creatures work and how they look like they're still in your hand. They fixed the issue of casting costs, I think. If you get a bunch of cards in there, it is harder than hell to select the card you want. If you've got like 8 or 10 cards in your hand, you have to like scroll through and just barely clip the corner of the card. So that has to be a little bit easier. The other thing is they still have to work on that auto tapping. Let's say I've got 2 blue and a black, and one of that black actually taps for a black or a blue. It'll actually auto tap so that it doesn't allow me to have the correct amount of mana, even though you should be able to look at my hand and say, yeah, this is the way you'll tap it. So I think that needs to be tweaked. Having to select your opponent when it says target opponent and there's only one opponent, I understand if Brawl goes on to Arena, which, you know, obviously it's going to. When you have a single opponent, just automatically select your opponents. It's not about winning. It's not about becoming gold, you know, gold pro on Arena. It's all about testing it so that when they do release it after the initial wipe, because there's going to be another wipe, then when they do release it, it's a good product.
Yeah, you're part of the Shakedown team getting this ready for the broader community. I do like the platform. I think Wizards is heading in the right direction. And when they roll this out, I think it's going to be very successful. The Arena beta, you can still sign up if you want to jump in and give Wizards your feedback.
Sean, did you see the hilarious professor video between Arena and Hearthstone?
No, I didn't.
Oh, God, that sounds amazing.
It's him representing that he's Magic the Gathering, and then he's got kind of, I would call him a young hipster dude, saying he's Hearthstone, and it's really, really funny. It's only like 4 or 5 minutes, but I would suggest everyone go out and watch it, because he puts a really, really good twist on what they're doing, positive and negative, but then he puts it into a nice little comedy video. So yeah, just search for Tolarian Community College and the Hearthstone video, or the Hearthstone versus Arena video.
I'll throw a link up in the show notes and we can check it out. I'm sure the professor will have some insightful skewers of Wizards in that. I look forward to the compare and contrast between where Magic wants to go and a successful product that's been in the digital market for quite some time. Where that product may never go is 25 years in. Wizards is celebrating the 25th year of Magic with a return home to Dominaria. Guys, if you listed the relationship between Wizards and Dominaria the way that most relationships are listed on social media, I would think it would have to be, it's complicated. Because a lot of the history in Dominaria has really tied Wizards' hands, because it's very convoluted from the early days of Magic, whether it was the temporal sundering or the fixing of planeswalkers from near godlike beings to the planeswalkers that we know today. Dominaria can be complicated when you get into some of the Vorthos history along the way. But that has not stopped us from finally taking a look at the cards that have been revealed for Dominaria and starting to pick out ones that are interesting to us, we feel may be big players, or ones that, frankly, we just think are going to be interesting once we get our hands on them. I know that Juggernaut and Icy Manipulator are back, and I want to start with a hat tip off the top. If you didn't play with these originally, they are not going to be as powerful in today's interpretation of the game as they were when they were originally feared at tables from LGS to LGS, and this is a nice nod to some nostalgia. You can sell me nostalgia. Just don't go too far and expect me to pay too much for it. So Juggernaut, Icy Manipulator, welcome back. Guys, the first one that jumps out to me, Lyra Dawnbringer. 3 white, 5/5 flyer, first strike, lifelink, other angels get +1/+1. This seems like a legacy of the Baneslayer Angel come to life. Is this better than Baneslayer Angel, or the fact that Baneslayer had protection from demons and dragons in the standard format that she was in? Was she better for her time then? Lyra Dawnbringer, I think this is going to be an interesting one.
With that anthem effect, there's a lot of angels in all sets just because that's one of the most beloved kind of tribals that you can have going back in Magic's history. And I think the numbers on her for a 5/5 for 5 without all of the other evasion that she has, I think is fantastic. And the anthem on top is just bonkers. Baneslayer was probably at the peak of her game in that standard format. I remember when that card hit like $70 and it was legitimately reasonable to go out and spend $70 on a Baneslayer Angel because it was that effective in that format. So I think Lyra is going to be really, really good in this format. Curious to see how the metagame shifts, etc. But I'd put it right up there with having one of the immediate impacts as we move into the first couple weekends of Dominaria.
This set, so far, they've done a hell of a job of mixing kind of old and new. But I am seeing a decent amount of six butts in the set so far. Now, maybe those are just the big guys that we're seeing and, you know, power will come down a little bit. I can't wait to see the art on it, too, because they are just knocking the art out of the park with this so far.
Matt, is there a card that jumps out to you?
This one, I think, is flying under the radar and it's uncommon. I think it's one of the more powerful cards in the set. And that's a Danitha Capuchin Paragon. It's a 2/2 for a white and two colorless, so 3-drop. Legendary creature, human knight. This is I believe it's the great-great-great-granddaughter of Gerard Capuchin, if I remember correctly. I was reading this story. I was getting a little deep into the lore there. This creature has first strike, vigilance, lifelink for a 2/2 for 3. And aura and equipment spells you cast cost 1 less to cast. You can cast the Baffling End in the short term. That's a 2-drop. You can cast that for 1. This doesn't tap to attack, so it doesn't get blown out by the removal spell that's, I think it's exile target tapped creature. Even though it's an uncommon, it's going to be a freaking powerhouse as a 3-drop just because it dodges what I think is going to be the most effective removal. Yes, it does die to shock. If we get some good auras and some good equipment spells, this could be just a huge, huge blowout.
I wish I was friends with H.G. Wells so I had a time machine and I could edit out what you just said and put
exactly
it in your spot for last week's 3 minutes to brew. Because what you just said was actually more insightful about Danitha than when we did it on 3 minutes to brew last week.
I know,
week.
And I've thought about it all week. I'm like...
Well, if you would have just acknowledged we did it on 3 minutes to brew, that would have been fine.
After I listened to the episode this or later in the week, last week's episode, and I'm like, what about this? What about this? And it got me thinking. So, Brian, it worked. My old man addled brain that's clogged up with lard and fat right now. It just took a week to kick into.
Oh, God, that's funny.
Brian, is there a card that you're really looking at and going, yeah, let's get to it?
The card I'm looking at is so in line with my natural play patterns, my natural color chart. And I haven't been this excited about a blue-white card since Benser the Sojourner back in Marauden. Teferi, Hero of Dominaria. It's a 4-loyalty Planeswalker for 5, so it is a little pricey. +1/draw card at the beginning of the next end step, untap 2 lands. -3, put target non-land permanent into its owner's library, 3rd from the top. Its ultimate is -8. You get an emblem whenever you draw a card, exile target permanent and opponent controls. Guys, with all the card draw available, and I'm not just thinking of standard, but in modern, this card, I feel like if you can just kick him up to ultimate, it's just going to be absolutely nuts, bonkers. And yes, I'm going to try to do this. It doesn't protect himself all that well, doesn't create a token in any way, shape, or form, but this is one of those cards that if you're not going to answer it in 2 or 3 turns, I feel like you're going to be in a world of trouble. So Teferi, Hero of Dominaria, is definitely a card that I look for that might have a big impact on standard. It might not just do anything. It might just kind of hang out there, kind of like Narset.
This is what Venser wanted to be. When Venser teleported his heart into Karn, where he really teleported it was into Teferi, Hero of Dominaria. Because if you look at the original 5-drop Venser, it was kind of a confused card. Two of the abilities wanted you to play control. One of them wanted you to play creatures. And it was this real mixed bag of what a 5-drop Planeswalker could do. I'm going to go against what you said, Brian. I think Teferi defends himself very well. +1 draw a card, untap 2 lands. That gives you the mana to interact with potential threats.
That's a good point, yeah.
-3, put target permanent, not creature, permanent, 3rd from the top in its owner's library. I think that's another way to defend itself if you've got the board sort of under control and you're worried about like an opposing Planeswalker going off. I think this card defends itself better than one might think at first glance. So I think Teferi and -8, if you're a control deck, it just equals win the game. Draw cards and exile permanents. That means you then have that card available that you drew to deal with something else. So you're getting free 2-for-1s for drawing cards. I think this is going to be fantastic. And I think blue-white control can now do things other than approach in order to win.
I really like the card, too. I'm not sure. I have a feeling he's going to hang out just kind of like Narset, like you said, Brian, where he's just not powerful enough. And I hate saying that, but I think that's going to happen. I mean, in this format, it seems like you're getting beat down by a lot of stuff. And it seems like there's the ability to go wide as well, and he doesn't protect himself when going wide. I'm just worried that he's not going to do anything, but I can definitely see that he's very, very powerful.
There's a couple of cards that I don't think are going to be format breakers, but I think they do something important. Broken Bond, 1 and a green sorcery, destroy target artifact or enchantment, put a land from your hand into play. You get to ramp on the turn that you destroy something that your opponent played. I think that's going to be an important card, and it's just 1 green. This is a splashable card that you can use in multicolored strategy. So I think Broken Bond might become a sideboard all-star in the future. Dark Bargain, 3 and a black, instant. Look at the top 3 cards of your library, put 2 of them into your hand and 1 into your graveyard. Dark Bargain deals 2 damage to you. In my mind, this isn't necessarily a clear-cut improvement over the traditional black 3-mana, take 2 damage, draw a couple cards card, Matt. But the fact that it's instant speed, I think, mitigates the damage of it being a 4-drop and digging 3 in. This gives you a viable alternative when something like Hieroglyphic Illumination rotates out of the format, or if you don't want to play blue, this does a very good imitation.
It's just a tad. If it was 3 mana, I would say absolutely. I think if 4 mana, I think you need to be doing something there. Now, if you have an early drop, like a really good early drop, you take that into Dark Bargain, and then you play some haymaker like the Demon Lord. If you do that, if you're able to kind of go like 3-drop into Dark Bargain into that, then yeah. And I mean, you do have Caligo Skin Witch. You have some other cards here. I think it's a possibility, but I think at 4 mana, you might just not be doing a bunch. Look, you know, essentially brainstorm, take 2 damage, take 2 cards out, and then get rid of the other card. So I could see it being powerful, but I think in the overall format, I'm not sure it's going to be that powerful.
I think this is the result of the playtest group. At 3, I think this is busted. If this was 2 and a black as an instant, take 2 cards in your hand, put 1 in your graveyard, this would be in my Legacy Reanimator deck.
Easily. It's like Black Brainstorm.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is. It's just too good. So yeah, for 4 at instant speed, I could see it. I think that's the trade-off. Instant speed, you get the 1 more colorless mana for Dark Bargain. I really do like Dark Bargain. Anybody who's ever played with, you know, Read the Bones and some of the other cards that, like you said, Sean, you know, draw 2, pay 2 life, they are very, very valuable in those black decks that just don't have any kind of filtering. That's what you want. Dark Bargain seems like this could go standard playable very, very easily.
Brian, is there another card that has your attention?
There's some themes I've been seeing in here, and I'm really excited, and I never thought I'd saw this after the emotional scarring that Fallen Empires has left on me. Yeah. However, Slimefoot the Stowaway, which is a legendary creature that's a fungus. It's a 2/3 for a black, a green, and 1. And it's whenever a sapperling you control dies, Slimefoot deals 1 damage to each opponent, and you gain a life. And then you can just spend 4 to create a 1/1 green sapperling. And I was like, okay, that's kind of cool. That seems like a limited card. And then I'm looking like, oh, Spore Crown Thalid. it's a fungus. Each other creature you control that's a fungus or a saproling gets +1/+1. I'm thinking, oh, you can start cranking out an army here. And then there's a black card that I'm really interested in, and I'm curious to see if somebody is going to do anything with this card. This is Fungal Infection. Single black instant. Target creature gets -1/-1 until end of turn. Create a 1/1 green saproling creature token. For one black, you get to potentially kill a creature and create a creature at instant speed. That, to me, seems really, really good. And in the kind of tempo of you're building up like a token saproling army that could eventually get really, really big with the redundancy of just being able to, you know, dump mana and make even more. And I'm sure there's going to be some more fungal and thalid enablers going forward. This seems like a really kind of a fun way to brew up a new deck.
I actually see that card making a splash in Legacy, because with the Grixis Delver decks, you can at instant speed kill their young Pyromancer and protect yourself from a Liliana of the Veil -2.
Oh, absolutely. Think about that. You know, even put something on the battlefield that just blocks something that they're coming at you with. Having that second body on the battlefield, I think, is such a big deal. But to do it for just one black mana, to leave one black open, and people are thinking they're going to get Fatal Pushed or something, and then suddenly you end up with a creature as well, that's a big game.
That's a card that most people might not jump on. Interesting, Brian. A couple other ones that have jumped out to me before we get to the elephant in the room. Precognition Field. Matt, is this a better or worse version of Future Sight, the old 2BBB enchantment that allowed you to cast cards from the top of your deck with the top card of your deck being revealed? Precognition Field is 3BB enchantment. You may cast the top card of your library if it's an instant or a sorcery. That card is not revealed, so you don't have to give that information to your opponent. You can look at it and then decide if you want to cast it. And then for 3, you can just exile the top card of your library if you don't want to cast it or draw it or whatnot. I think Precognition Field is a huge upgrade over Future Sight because it hides the information. And I think also at 4, this could operate as a pseudo planeswalker where you put it into play when you're not under pressure and it gives you an ongoing advantage that becomes hard for your opponent to keep up with over the course of a game.
I don't know how I feel about this card. I saw this and I saw somebody saying that they were going to run it in Legacy Miracles. And I'm thinking, really? 4 mana? Would you just rather cast a Jace? This is another one. We're going to have to get some really powerful instances of sorceries. And maybe some of those instances of sorceries are, you know, cards like Wizard's Lightning and Wizard's Counterspell as well. That was spoiled. The Wizard's Retort. I think if you get a kind of a blue-black control, you can get your cast down, you can get your ops, you get all that. Maybe you see that in there, maybe in a blue-white deck. But I think a lot of it depends on how many non-instant, non-sorceries you're going to be casting. And if we have sorceries, instants as well, that create creatures or create finishers for the decks, that's a good card.
I would also like to welcome Demon Lord Belzenlock to my Heartless Summoning deck. He is going to be an outstanding addition going forward there. I'm looking forward to that. Karn's Temporal Sundering. 4BB. You get a discount on Time Walk plus Bounce for just 6. Now, it is a legendary, but you're going to want to play this, Brian, with a Planeswalker or an artifact or an enchantment or something already in play so you can use that to your advantage to set up and take the extra turn. Yes, you do have to exile it once you've cast it, but Karn's Temporal Sundering, you actually get a discount by paying 6 mana at once over the traditional cost of Time Warp, which is 5 mana, plus a bounce spell, which is usually 2 mana. I think this is going to be a real player.
Aside from it being extremely powerful, I cannot wait to see what this card looks like in foil. For the listeners out there who haven't seen the card yet, there's like these different bands of artwork that are kind of flowing behind Karn on here. And I think on the foiling process, it's just going to like blow your mind. So this looks like one that, you know, I would want to pick up in foil right away. I think this card looks really, really strong. Having seen some of the Taking Turns decks in Modern, I don't know if this is another addition to that or just another take on this, but are people going to be looking for those like bigger Taking Turns strategies in a standard format, trying to take advantage of a Karn's Temporal Summoning if they've already got the game locked up and you can just kind of, you know, hit them twice or 3 times before they get to do anything. This looks like a really, really fun build around.
Matt, you like to rub things out. Would you tap for 4 mana and rub something to make a 5/6 on turn floor? Zadid, Djinn of the Lamp. 4 and 2 blue for a 5/6 flyer. That's the traditional cost for such a large fatty in blue. But you can short that by paying 3 and a blue and tapping any artifact that you have in play to put Zadid into play. This may give rise to a blue aggro strategy for a 5/6 flyer on turn 4. I'm interested. I don't know if it's going to be good enough.
This one, I think it depends on what artifacts we have that don't create mana. So obviously this doesn't pair well with Power Stone Shard. I mean, I guess it kind of does. Then I think it's really good. But other than that, maybe if it's a artifact creature that's just you're kind of done with, you know, maybe it's a 2/3, something like that. Maybe that's how it will work. But yeah, I mean, I'm not sure because I just don't see the artifacts that aren't mana rocks or aren't giant creatures. You'd rather just be attacking with those.
The other card that I am extremely interested in, and talking about discounting, Sean, I could not help but be very, very drawn to Torgar, Famine Incarnate, legendary creature. It's 2 black and 6, but as an additional cost, you may sacrifice any number of creatures. This spell costs 2 generic less to catch for each creature sacrificed this way. And when Torgar, Famine Incarnate enters the battlefield, up to 1 target player's life total becomes half their starting life total rounded down. The ability to crank out some early tokens and to plop this down as early as maybe turn 3 could be an absolute game changer. It's a 7/6. It doesn't have flying, but a 7/6, and you're taking half your opponent's starting life total away. I think that has got some real play in Standard right now.
There's an old EDH deck called Mathematician's Wet Dream. This card could go into Standard with the black Minotaur Pirate that makes both players lose 1/3 of their life total rounded up. All of a sudden, we need an Abacus to play Standard to figure these things out going forward. So is it going to be powerful? Yes. Can you put together a deck to leverage it consistently? I think that would be really tough.
There's a lot of these cards that just grab the feeling of what Dominaria was, and I think they're super powerful. So I'm excited to see what's going to happen, and I'd be a liar if I said I wasn't excited to play with a little bit of the Arvid the Curse, the 5-drop Death Touch, Life Linker, Vampire, other legendary creatures you control get +2/+2. I just want a whole lot of legendary creatures out, and that would be pretty awesome.
Well, if none of these cards have made you grab your drink this week and scream Wilco Tango Foxtrot, this one is going to. Let's get to the elephant in the room, guys. This is the one that has been creating waves since the leak. Damping Sphere. 2 generic mana artifact. Any land that is tapped for more than 1 mana instead produces colorless when you tap it. Each spell cast costs 1 more for each spell cast before it this turn. This is the Hate Bear's Hate Bear. This is going to entirely change the metagame in any format in which you have gained an advantage by playing multiple spells on one turn. Let's see. Modern, Legacy, Vintage. You might want to check the price on your Mishra's Workshop because now it just taps for 1. This Damping Sphere, I think, is going to be the shot heard round the world from Dominaria.
I can't believe they hate Storm so much that they would print this. It's disappointing to me. You know, I've made the joke that I need to play my mono green 12 post one last time. Well, it's because of this. This is going to be one of those. Every single sideboard's going to have 2, maybe 3 of these in Modern, and every sideboard in Legacy, almost every sideboard in Legacy is going to have probably 2 of these. There's so much splash damage on this, and I can't believe they printed this hate card that it's literally just going to eat up a slot or two in every single sideboard.
Brian, you played Sneak and Show. You've got 6 or 8 lands that used to tap for 2. Have you been checking the price on those lately?
That's an interesting thing. I was, you know, when Hurley kept saying, you know, oh, got to make 1 more run with mono green 12 post and those kinds of big mana decks, the high tide decks and things like that. I'm kind of like, oh, wait, that's going to affect Eldrazi as well. it functions on two different things. It hates storm, but it also hates ramp in a way. It hates the lands like City of Traders. It hates Ancient Tomb.
Brian, let's just be honest. This card hates Dirty Cheaters.
Dirty Cheaters and those looking to play Magic at an accelerated pace so they have time to go get coffee before their next round. Absolutely, it hates those people. I feel like this is a card that's going to have a ban target on it from the very beginning. This is format warping if it becomes as prevalent as we all seem to think it's going to be. I don't know how you can't have this in your sideboard, and I don't know how you get around it if you see this card hit the battlefield and you don't have an immediate answer for it. I was already starting to think like, huh, is this a way if you're playing Eldrazi and you can have the option to hold up some more mana to maybe play your Chalice on two as opposed to Chalice on one, is that a play you make with Damping Sphere in the format, you know, post-sideboard? I think that's an absolutely reasonable question. To me, this is almost too much because it's so specific, and what it does can just warp the game to the point of non-games. It just makes non-games out of it. I know some people who've played against Mirran Crusader, Phyrexian Crusader before. If you're on those colors and it's got protection from there and it's got double strike, you're just kind of sitting back and taking your lumps and you scoop and you move on to the next game and hopefully you don't see that card. This is another one of those cards that I think can make a lot of non-games, and I don't think Wizards wants that in any format.
Yeah, this is also going to really take a toll on the quote-unquote free blue counter spells in the Eternal formats. And I know there's an entire section of Magic fans who are cheering wildly for what that is going to do to your opponents playing Daze and Force of Will when you think they're tapped out. They'll get to play one of them and you can play around it, but they're probably not going to get to play two, especially if they're tapped out on their turn. Damping Sphere, soon to be warping formats near you. Those are the cards we're excited about in Dominaria. You got one that you're really excited about? Hit us up on the Patreon page, patreon.com/tryhards. That brings us up to this week's In the Elevator. Change is in the air. Matt, why do you smell all musty, like you just crawled out of some grave?
Because I'm saying sell the Scarab Gods. Scarab Gods are currently trending downwards. You can get them now under $30. Rotation is only 4 months away. When Dominaria comes out, that's when you're going to want to sell those Scarab Gods. I mean, you just want to get rid of them if you can at all. They're not going to maintain all their value. They'll always be, you know, an $8, $10 card. They're never going to maintain above $15 or so unless they start to break into other formats, which we haven't seen that happen yet. Dump your Scarab Gods.
The Scarab God. We'll see if he can resurrect his own price before rotation. That brings us up to this week's 3 Minutes to Brew. This is a card that I am secretly excited about. My inner Timmy is ready to go. Brian, what do we got this week?
I don't know how anybody cannot be excited about this card. I know you're going to be unexcited if you see this on the other side of the battlefield. Especially right next to Atlanta War Elf, because you know how quickly it got out onto the battlefield. This is Steel Leaf Champion. 3 green for 5/4 Elf Knight. Steel Leaf Champion can't be blocked by creatures with power 2 or less. Realizing that this is both an elf and a knight, and realizing all of the different interactions that Dominaria has with knight creatures, this is a card that I think could just go out of control in certain formats. So, Hurley, I'm going to start with you this week. Do you see Steel Leaf Champion as being just a, not just a limited bomb, which I think it's going to be? Are people going to be casting a turn one Land of War Elf and then getting out their Steel Leaf Champion as early as turn two?
Since this doesn't have trample, if we don't have a way to give this trample, I don't think that it's going to make, you know, just an obnoxious splash on the whole format. We have to kind of look at where things stand. If there is there a lot of stuff with 3 power, you know, is there a lot of stuff with 4 power? What's you know, what's the back end of these creatures looking like? I think that's the important part of this. I think where this one's going to shine, I think in Modern, and I think the mono green stomping deck is going to play this card pretty heavily. This is the card that kind of pushes it up from tier 2.5 to like tier 1.5 or so. So I really like this card. I just need to figure out a way to give it trample.
Well, I rarely write flavor text, And that is the one thing that makes me reticent. But I am all ready for the flavor text that should have been on this card. And I can't believe Wizards didn't come to me for this. New bar separator from the ability. Flavor text. Because Wooly Thokter wasn't good enough. Steel Leaf Paladin. It's a 5-4 for 3, but Wooly Thokter had to have a white, a green, and a red. Much more difficult to produce on curve on turn 3 and early on turn 2. Green, green, green? You're a dedicated green deck? That is easy to produce on turn 3. That is run-of-the-mill. And producing it on turn 2 off Llanowar Elves, and this is a change of directions for Wizards, because they said they didn't want to ramp from turn 1 to turn 2 or turn 2, you know, later in the format. That's why most of the mana dorks we've gotten lately have been 2 drops, because of the way they want the curve to play out. The reintroduction of Llanowar Elves into Standard is going to take some getting used to play against if you've never played in a Standard environment in which the mana dorks were 1 drops, i.e. Llanowar Elves, Elves of Deep Shadow, Birds of Paradise, whatever your favorite ramp creature is. Steel Leaf Paladin also comes with the ability that it can't be blocked by creatures with power 2 or less. That means this thing can't be chump blocked forever. You take out your opponent's 3-4 power creature, now you're getting in for 5. For 5. That is 25% of your starting life total. 5 power on turn 3 is nothing to sneeze at, even in the New World Order. But the potential for it on turn 2 really is going to have some control mages wetting their pants.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And like I alluded to earlier, the amount of things that I see interacting with knights in this format, especially History of Benalia, where it's got, this is the saga. Mode 1 and 2 create a 2-2 white knight creature token with vigilance. 3, knights you control get 2-1 until end of turn. Those kinds of numbers just make this elf knight absolutely bonkers. I think with that and all the other knights that are going to be running around, I think this card is going to find its way not in just mono green decks, but probably green and white decks, and especially with the color fixing that we also have in Standard coming up with Dominaria, this is going to be a real, real card that you're going to have to play around for a long time to come.
Steel Leaf Champion, this week's 3 Minutes to Brew here on Tryhards. That brings us up to what we did to get better at Magic this week. I took a break. I noticed myself getting a little bit salty with some things going on in Arena. I know we're just playtesters, but we're also Magic players, and we're competitors, and we're human beings, and I've been on a losing streak, and I had to step back and just kind of regain my bearings. So knowing when to step away to refresh your perspective, I think, is always something you can do to come back at it with a fresh mind and get back after it again. Brian, what'd you do to get better at Magic this week?
Gotta say, I took some time off. Didn't even think about Magic that much, except for when I saw a little bit of coverage from across the pond this weekend. I'm really excited about our possible next trip in the works to Minneapolis for a sealed tournament. Very, very excited to maybe get started on playing a lot more sealed and a lot more draft, getting ready for that. So that's kind of what I've been turning my focus to lately, and been scheduling some times with some of the playtesters here in town to really kind of see if we can become better limited players in the span of a few months to get ready for that Minneapolis trip. And I'm very, very excited about that.
Matt, what'd you do to get better at Magic this week?
Got my butt kicked in Modern, and it was just a very humbling experience where I'm like, yeah, if I want to play this format, and I almost said a word right before that, if I want to play this format, I actually need to put some more time into it. So I'm going to try and put a little more time into it. Hopefully, be it, like I said, have a deck in my bag so that if we ever pop, you know, if it ever pops up where somebody says, hey, let's play Modern, or there's a Modern tournament I want to play, and I have something available.
Whiskey Tango Foxtrot is what Matt meant to drop in right there. That's been the theme of this episode. I think we've hit on a name, guys, for this episode. Oh, you brave soul. Thanks for joining us for this week's episode of Tryhards. May all your legends be great for you, wherever you find them. We'll see you next week here on Tryhards.